Jack WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our intelligent chats now are brought to you by our friends Wise Markets. We're calling them Wise Conversations. We're bringing on new sponsors and new places. It's been a little while since I've gotten over to Franco's, but I have been in Catonsville a little bit lately, going up down Frederick Road. I see the music's out. Spring is sprung. Markets are open. Restaurants are happening. We're out at State Fair next week, kicking off our crab cake tour. And Lou Weinkam has returned as a returning champion here on the backside of talking all things family law and life in the Ville and 21228. I was wearing my shirt the other day with the chair stuff on it, and I'm thinking there's going to be like a real parade, right? Like, you guys are putting chairs out in front of your all of your industry right now. It's prime space in front of Franco's, right?
Yeah, it's going to – the parade is on from what I understand. And I'm sure come May, people will start putting their chairs out.
It's May.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right about that. I forgot.
It's the middle of May.
It is the middle of May. You're right. All right. So
it's because it's 50 degrees every morning. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's Preakness week, and we got a doping case, right? Like, yeah. It's baseball season. The Orioles are supposed to stink, and they got a guy throwing a no-hitter. And, you know, the Ravens are going to have a schedule this week. So, like, I got my second shot. So, yeah. I mean, at least that's going on, right? So we are feeling like sun is shining, right?
Yeah, I had my second shot about a month ago, and everybody in my family did. So we all feel a lot better about things. And I think people in general do feel better about where things are heading, and the people with the shots are feeling a little bit, you know, we can get out and do things. And there's been an uptick in the law practice of people, you know, feeling a little more comfortable to come in. And although I did have safe procedures there the whole time, and we still do, I think just in general people feel a little bit safer coming out to visit the, you know, law practice or Franco's.
You know, I've known you a little while now, certainly pre-pandemic, and getting to know you through this pandemic and doing radio with you and talking about all of this, and even you learning Zoom and getting a headset, and like for all of us, right? Like Dennis Colazzos, my dear friend, he and I are still playing with Zoom, trying to make things work the right way for what he does here. And I think we're all being challenged in different ways. I had a great conversation with Todd Marks this week from MindGrub about innovation and things that happen during these types of times in life. But I would think for you, people come in and bare their soul to you. They talk about dying. They talk about where they're going to leave their money, right? Yeah. And then they can stop at the bar and have a drink on the way home. Franco's, and get some great pasta, maybe to go home and pizza as well. Don't sleep on the bookmaker either. But I would say people at this point, and I talked to Bill Cole about this last week, conversations are weird and they're a little heavier. And, you know, I've gotten together with a high school friend of mine twice in the last couple of weeks because he's home taking care of his family, elder family in their 80s over in Dundalk. And we've gotten together and had a crab and whatnot. But I haven't gotten together with many people. And like, I would think for people, this period of time makes them even more apt to say, all right, need a will, need to get myself together. I mean, my relationship with you came when my mother died. It was Mother's Day this weekend. I put all these pictures up. I'm still untangling a mess, as you well know, in the aftermath of not having this stuff done. But I would think that when people get together now, the conversations are a little bit more of, first conversation is, so how was the pandemic for you? Did you catch it? When did you catch it? Who did you? I mean, that's sort of the first topic when you haven't seen somebody in 15 months.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a thing about that. And one of the things that comes up in human nature is a lot of children have a difficult time bringing it up to their parents, or and vice versa. Parents have the children are the ones that usually have a harder time than the parents. So the older ones, maybe the 80s or whatever, they don't have a problem talking about setting things up and making sure things are done. But a lot of times the kids don't really want to communicate because they don't want to think about their parent not being there for them.
And certainly not on Mother's Day weekend, right?
Certainly like, not on Mother's
Day. Hey, Mom, let's go make a will.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? No, absolutely.
When is the right time? It's kind of like talking about sex with your kids, right? Like, you know, when exactly, you know, I know Dr. Sigmund over at Chesapeake Urology, he lets me know exactly from a men's health, there's a number on it, 40, you know, they ring the bell and say, you probably should get in here. Your industry does not have that, right?
No. There's no magic for it. And every family is different. But I do stress that communication between parents and children is critical. And then also communication between the siblings is critical because most of the time, a lot of the problems or disgruntlements or any kind of miscommunications happen cause problems for for both sides. One example that I've used many times is planning for funerals. And if you go in and, you know, a parent might want to have a big party and they want to have crab cakes and, you know, they might see Nestor's tour and say, hey, we're going to go get crab cakes from three different places, have a big party when I die. And they might go out to dinner and you go out to dinner with child A and they say, have a big party for me. Let's just do it up. And then they go out to dinner maybe 2 weeks later and they say, I don't care. I don't want anything. You know, they might be in a bed and they might just spout off and say, just bury me in a box. I don't care, or cremate me. So parents sometimes don't realize how children take statements when really they need to write it down and they need to communicate it to all the siblings. So if you're out there and you want to make your funeral plans, you write them down, send an email to everybody so everybody sees the same thing, so the child A doesn't come and say, oh, mom says she wanted to have all these crab cakes from Nestor's store. And child C says, well, mom told me that she wanted to be cremated. And they both heard the same thing. And you create problems that way. So I think one of the things that I would say out there to the listeners, definitely communicate what your wishes are, because they're your wishes, and you don't want to create any kind of difficulties for siblings who otherwise might get along, now are at odds over each other because they feel like they're not carrying out wishes that you set out.
You know, I think in your business, I mean, as you're sitting here, it's almost like there's a little guidance counselor in you, a little priest and rabbi in you, you know, like when you're sitting in front, this is a very, very sensitive thing, maybe much more so than here. It's a cookie cutter will. You know, who are you leaving your silver and china and stocks and bonds to? It's way more complex than that, psychologically, emotionally. And to your point, the fallout of siblings who may or may not get along, or may get along about everything but have some differences. This really can be, I'm entangled enough, as you know. My 98-year-old mother died. Messy deed, this and that, and like all that, and getting untangled from that. At least I'm not fighting with anybody, and we're not fighting over $1 billion like some, you know, rich family, right? I mean, that you've seen probably the worst of humanity in that way. When it's not done, it opens Pandora's box, right?
Yeah, and that's the whole thing, and it doesn't matter. I've seen people, families bitter over $20,000, and sometimes it's all the ones that don't have money. It's more, you know, to an effect than it is with the people who have money, because there's always enough money. If you have enough money, there's enough money to cut it up and everybody just gets happy.
How about this? A picture, a painting, a ring, yes. a thing that there's only one thing of, that Billy gets it, Bobby gets it, you know, like that is even more, right? Of family and heirlooms, right?
And yep, that brings up another great point that I always make sure my clients know, is I don't like to put all that into the will, because if you say, you know, my Hummels to child A and my gun collection to child B, but then you change your mind years later, you have to come back and change your will. So what I usually have them do is get a piece of paper, write out all their wishes. Again, email it to everybody, and as time goes on, they might find out that somebody admires a different piece more than they thought, and so they can modify that and resend it out and say, here's, you know, we've changed this. The guns are going to child C because they really expressed an interest, et cetera, et cetera. So to be flexible and to be communicative on that aspect is another key thing in drafting your documents. It's not rocket science, it's not legal jargon, but it's more trying to put the practicalities on a will, so that when somebody dies, you don't leave a big, you know, disgruntlement or a mess to the, you know, future people.
I don't want anybody fighting over my bobblehead collection, you know, when it's all over right. With Lou Weinkamp joining us here doing family law over in the Ville, as well as our friends at Franco's and making the book. Give me a little sign of life on the business side, you know, being involved in a family business that has great food and really has always been set up. I've been going to Franco's for over a decade, set up as a place that you come in, you sit down, you talk to your server, you see the pizza go into the big thing, you have games on at the bar, like all of that. You know, I was at Costas the other day. I was over at State Fair, in and out. They were so busy. I just grabbed and went. But sitting down at like, that's the second shot now. I'm starting to feel like, all right, I'm about to come over there and sit down and order a proper pizza and get a salad and get a glass of wine or a beer. How are people feeling about that? And how are things moving? Because things still aren't really normal. Costas, the whole bar shut down there. It's not normal. Yeah. Nothing's normal yet.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not back to normal. And I'm not sure what normal is, or will it get back to normal. But I will say that people are coming in. They feel more comfortable. And Franco's is set up. You know, I'll give my credit to my wife and my son, who really do all the work. They did a fantastic job making sure that place is safe. And we have great service there. And just a quick story. I was there on Saturday. I coached JV lacrosse, and we beat Towson 6-1. That was a big deal. I was super excited. So I went up there to have a salad. And while I was up there, my nephew was working behind the bar, and there was these two little girls and a dad. And these kids were like 60 minutes asking him questions. Why are you doing the pizza this way? Why are you doing, what's that? And he was really good. He was really super with them. And, you know, the girls are so excited.
Guy Fieri kitchen, right?
It was.
Everybody wants to step into, you know, Ina's kitchen and see how she makes it.
It was terrific. And so then I walked over and talked to the kids, because when I'm there, I do like to talk to the customers. And the girl says, "Oh, it's my new favorite pizza place." I said, "Okay, you're my crew. This is great to hear." So it is a nice family-friendly environment over there. Those two kids had a good time. The dad was happy because their kids were happy. And the staff handled it great, you know, asking questions and just figuring all the things out. So it is a good family spot, and it is a lot of, you know, local contacts there. And I do have a great staff. I mean, they're so friendly, and, you know, we're not perfect by any imagination, but whenever there's something, we always make it right. And my son Trey is a great manager, and my wife Dawn is terrific at, you know, running the place. So they're really doing well. I've kind of stepped back a little bit, and maybe I'll get back into it, you know, day to day in the future. But right now, those guys are the ones taking care of it.
Well, food's still good. I was over at Moeller's house in the rain. I dropped him off, you know, in the new set, my Sporticulture, the magma lamps that glow, like lava, they're magma.
Yeah.
I dropped those off for Jeff and his kids and the Moeller family. Jeff's, by the way, my condo's listed. See Moeller and Gary. This is the view. Come see it. Come by it. Please do. We're moving where we get a little bit of sunshine and can grow some fresh vegetables we could put on our pizza and our salads. So I pull out of Moeller's and I'm like, oh, man, I really want bookmaker, and I didn't have time to even call. Like, I was like, it was raining out, it was awful, and I just pulled up. There's a parking spot. I'm like, if there's a parking spot right in front of Frank, and there is. And I pulled in, and I walked in, and your son's in there, and hey, what's up? And we're all wearing a mask, and it was like early. It was like 11. It was 11:15. I wasn't even sure you were open. And I popped in. I said, bookmaker to go. Man, I got home. He couldn't have put more shrimp in it. I mean, it was. And I'm like, I know you guys know my cat likes the shrimp, but she just needs I just need one little shrimp for her to last 3 days. You know, she's a cat. But man, I was eating shrimp for I was putting it on different salads. I was mixing it into fajitas. I was doing all sorts of stuff because, man, you're a bookmaker. Now I know why you get the bookmaker every time.
I get the bookmaker all the time. And the product is great. We have the same chefs. And one of the things that I will say, in the restaurant industry, a lot of people are losing chefs. Or they're not hiring back the same people for various reasons. You see a lot of help wanted signs, and Franco's has had the same staff, same guys who know that menu back and forth. And I'm confident in Mike and Davey. They do a great job. And then we got some new guys training under them. They're just fantastic. And I have total confidence that the product will be amazing.
Lou Weinkamp's here. He's doing family law as well as some delicious Italian food over in DeVille. And look, this is the point in the show. We got to talk some sports here and throw something in, because I know you're doing lacrosse and baseball and stuff. The no-hitter last week. I mean, you're an old fart like me. We have not had a lot to cheer about around here the last 30 years, as was pointed out by the manager in the aftermath, that we haven't had a lot to cheer about. And it took me on memory lane. You know, Mahler's telling me stories that he used to go over to Hoyt Wilhelm's house in Catonsville and get baseballs autographed, you know, after Hoyt Wilhelm threw the no-hitter. You know, the 91 no-hitter, the Juan Nieves no-hitter I was at, I've told those stories. But last week, you're a baseball guy. I mean, this is sort of an all-timer. The John Means, the where were you that day? Because last I checked, not many people saw all 9 innings of that one.
Well, I just got done lacrosse practice, right, and so I stopped into Franco's, and I caught the seventh inning, and somebody said, wow, he's on. I saw the beginning of it, the first couple innings, and I left and went and then came back, and I was at Franco's, and somebody said, oh, he's got a no-hitter, so watched the last two innings, and Trey, my son, was with me. I said, look, we're not going to go home yet. We're going to stay here and watch the no-hitter, and we did, and there was about, you know, 10 people in the bar, and everybody's jumping around excited, and The joy of the players was really something that I really liked watching, that because you could tell they were a team and they were celebrating their guy, and you could see how close they were. And, you know, I'm a big coach, and I base things on how I see people react. And you could tell that the Orioles are a close-knit group, and they love their manager, and their manager loves them, and they love each other. And it's just a really fun, exciting thing to see how celebratory they were when he got that no-hitter.
Well, that's going to get them more wins. You know, they're not going to be 54 and 108. I don't think they're going to be 81 and 81, right?
Yeah, right.
But I think, you know, if there's something that propels them to 70 victories this year, way above where they should be, it would be that they got a kid doing something special pitching wise. I mean, they're not hitting the ball, right? I mean, right. And I don't know where those answers are. And as good as we felt about Zimmerman, and I know it's a great story for your family and people on your side of town that everybody knows this kid, right? Everybody grew up with him. This is tough. This is still, as I keep pointing out to Dan Roderick's on Twitter, they're not trying to win. They're really not trying to win.
Yeah, I think the players are trying. Management set it up so they're going to get young, and if somebody's a veteran on that team and has a good first half of the season, they might be traded for more youth for next year. But I do feel that some of these players, you know, look at the Mancinis or the Cedric Mullins, and you feel a little bit of back. And I know you can remember this going to Oriole Magic. You can see that they make some critical plays. You know, they do the smart things. They got guys that fill in roles that can do things. Now, they're not loaded throughout the whole lineup, but you got bits and pieces of it. You can start to see it coming together. And when you bring up some of the young guys like, you know, Gunnar Henderson and some of the other guys, D.L. Hall, that are down in the minor leagues, Adley Rutschman, all those guys, they might put it together in the next two or three years.
All right. Well, from your lips to, the schedule makers' ears for the NFL. We got NFL schedule this week, right? We got the horse race. I mean, this has been a whole referendum on cheating, right? Like, I mean, if we're going to talk about baseball, we're going to talk about, you know, steroids and all that. The horse racing thing this week, I'm not going to pretend I'm an equine expert about, you know, dosage for horses, but this is unfortunate, certainly for the race, for the industry, for Bob Baffert, for all the way around. I mean, Baffert did the show last week, right? So he gets on me early. He's like, hey, I'll come on your show early. I'll give you more time. We can talk about some things because I'm going to be stretched next week when I get here. He said, hit me. He did 28 minutes with me the other day. It's at a Baltimore Positive. None of it works anymore. They're not coming. There's no here. Right. And I think for the whole industry, and I'm talking to every Randy Moss and Kenny Mayne's coming on this week, and Lafitte Penkai's coming on this week, and Donna Brothers, they're all coming on. I hit them all on Sunday. They're like, there's nothing to say because we have no idea. This is going to be a really weird week for Preakness.
Well, about the cheating thing, I kind of feel like when you're in that industry, you have to know everything that's going into that horse. You have to follow those rules. Like to an extent, and he's such a veteran guy. I can't imagine how something like that could happen with something so critical. You know, I don't, the same thing with the ball players when they say, oh, I didn't know that my vitamin had, you know, I'm like, you have to know all those things.
You're putting it in your body.
Yeah, and you have to know it. It's your job to know that I don't know what happened on that thing. You know, he's professing that he, you know, was a mistake and innocence. And at the same time, he also knows his horse is going to get tested. So why would you even do it? Cause you know, you're going to get tested. Right. I don't know.
It leaves so many questions.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier this week, whether it's OJ Simpson or whether it's Bill Belichick or whether it's Bill Cosby or whether it's whomever, right? I mean, Roger Clemens, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, Lance Armstrong, right? Like all of the idolization and all of the, well, he's not capable of that. She's not capable of that. They couldn't do that. There would be, you know, why would they cheat? Why would FloJo cheat? You know what I mean? Like, right. And then you peel back the curtain of baseball 20 years ago, everybody was cheating. You know, and then you look at the horse racing and thing and say, all right, you know, what are they going to, who are the police? What's the fine? What really happens here if and when you get caught? And it's happening too much to Baffert that this is becoming, this is a week that's going to be a comeuppance in the whole industry. And I think that's my concern, especially given where Baltimore is with the track. We've had Bill Cole on this week talking about the new Pimlico and drawings and what they're going to get done and Laurel and how it equates to the state. It's just, it's not a good scandal for horse racing after they've already had horses dying and other things happening in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know the future of horse racing. It seems like it's going to be a tough road to hoe. You don't have the same people that want to go out there and, you know, hang out for an afternoon. I think it's an age thing, just like, you know, boxing and horse racing. They might have peaked in the 20s and 30s and they're hanging on. I just don't know that there's a group of younger people that want to go do that as much as anybody that's older. So I do think racing's kind of in a little bit of trouble.
Lou, tell everybody how to find you over at with what you do in wills and estates, just taking good care of people, making sure they don't have the mess that I have when my mother died.
Yeah, so I do specialize in wills and estates. My phone number is 410-744-3256. And then I have a website, winecam.com. And also my email is loujr@weinkam.com. So Lou Jr. at winecam.com. And we offer free consultations. And we do We do work in wills and estates. That's what we focus on.
Well, hey, man, I'll see you over at Bookmaker real soon and hopefully over another no-hitter and some baseball talk and some more lacrosse wins for you and celebrations and pizzas and all that good stuff, all right?
Yeah, I'll keep you up to date on the lacrosse wins. I'm still super happy about the win on Saturday.
I see a crab cake in your future, Lou Wine.
You're right up my alley. I want to join the tour. I'd love to join the tour.
Hey, man, come on along. That's the whole idea. Join the club. Lou Wine Camp joining us over at Catonsville and at Franco's. Big appreciation. We're going to be back over at Catonsville next week, starting things at State Fair outside Alfresco, moving inside, hopefully, before the summer is over as well. And Don Moeller and I are together at BaltimorePositive.com.